Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon. How are you? Very sad news just coming to us now about the death of athletics sort of genius, I suppose, Gerry Kiernan. Not only has he made his name on the track, but off the track as well, training some of our best athletes. And the news that Gerry has died at the age of 67. And there are tributes pouring in for a man who has achieved so much in his career. He was with the Clonliffe Harriers, and they've posted this. It's with absolute shock that Clonliffe Harriers have to announce the very sad death last night of 1984 Olympian and Clonliffe Harriers life member Gerry Kiernan. Gerry was an institution, a sub-4-minute miler, having ran 3:59.12 in June 1976. He went on to enjoy a stunning career as a distance athlete. He was national cross-country champion in Kilmacow in 1984 and won the national senior team title with Clonliffe on the extraordinary 8 occasions. And it lists the years there. It was, however, over the classic marathon distance that he made his name, winning the Dublin City Marathon on 2 occasions, 1982 and 1992. And of course, the pinnacle, his outstanding run in the 1984 Los Angeles Olympic Marathon, when he placed 9th with a personal best of 2 hours, 12 minutes and 20 seconds. And that's 26.2 miles in 2 hours, 12 minutes and 20 seconds. In addition to all of this, he's one of the country's top coaches, was very much a philosopher. You would recognise his name. He was on the telly. He did punditry when it came to athletics with RTE. He'd be greatly missed by his family, clubmates, athletes and the athletics family. And that's it. And of course, Ciara McGeehan, who's one of our best athletes at the moment, trained by Gerry Kiernan. You know, the man with the hair. And Neil upstairs, when he moved to Dublin from down the country, Gerry was one of his teachers. So he was a school teacher as well, and people will have memories of Gerry as a school teacher. And he was a man you saw about the place. I used to see him in Ranelagh an awful lot, and I do a bit of running, tiny bit of running, but he'd always wave at you and salute you, because I suppose any bit of running he thought was running. It didn't matter if you're running sub-2:15 marathons in the Olympics or whether you're trying to get home from the middle of town up to wherever you were going, UCD or wherever. And that there is the thing, UCD, you always saw him around UCD because that's where he trained a lot of his young athletes. He had them run around UCD on a Saturday. So very sad news there. And our thoughts are with his family and friends and everybody who knew him, Gerry Kiernan. May he rest in peace. Died last night, age 67. And of course, all the papers today are full of the inauguration yesterday, and everybody has their favourite bits. Was it, Lady Gaga's outfit? Was it the poem by Amanda Gorn? Was it Bernie Sanders sitting on his own? because of social distancing, everybody was spaced out. I don't know if you must have seen it. And people were sitting there, and Bernie Sanders was there in his mittens and his big coat, keeping himself warm against the cold. And what a brilliant technical guy in New York has done is he's taken that picture, right, and he's allowed people all over the world to place Bernie Sanders in front of their house. Yeah, I know, it's bats. It's one of those things that gets people going, and it's gone viral. So by clicking onto this thing, we'll put it up on our website. We're going to be talking to the man soon as well. You can get that picture. It's an isolated picture of Bernie Sanders, and it looks like he's sitting on that chair that he used for the presidential inauguration yesterday outside your house. That's the type of thing that people do now with technology. And there's analysis as well of Joe Biden. And Joe Biden looked fit and healthy. He's 78, looked fit and healthy yesterday. He delivered his 20-minute speech, with vigour and vim and an enthusiasm, a youthful enthusiasm, dare I say it. And, of course, there's analysis now of, his state of health. And Eilish O'Regan, big fan of Eilish O'Regan. She does an analysis in The Independent today. You've probably seen it. And he does weightlifting. He plays golf. He does the rowing machine. And he has a very healthy lifestyle. He doesn't drink, doesn't smoke. And he does a bit of cycling as well. And at the end of her piece then, she says, Mr. Biden is also reported to have some nip and tuck work done on his face and also said to have had a hair transplant, although neither has been confirmed. So that's in there at the end. However, the key to the new president's personality, which has stood to him, is found in his quote, "Get up. The art of living is simply getting up after you've been knocked down." Well, when he got up this morning, he's faced with this Herculean task of unifying America, a very divided country. And he won't have a minute to himself now for the next 4 years. He won't have a second to himself for the next 4 years. So at the end of that, he'd be 82. But I was just looking at his, you know, his diary. It's just chock-a-block. It's chock-a-block. And you're not, it's not just smiling and waving stuff. He has to make big decisions. Like already he signed a number of executive orders. They're back into the Paris Accord. And various other things. So he has to make big decisions. And I was watching Operation Transformation. You're probably saying, where are you going now? Tying the President of the United States of America to Operation Transformation. But Aoife was talking about decision-making fatigue. And seemingly this is a recognised phenomenon that when you have to make a lot of decisions over and over again, your brain gets very, very tired. And at the end of it all, what do? You make bad decisions because you don't make good decisions when you're tired. So he has this huge entourage of people who would be keeping him healthy and watching out for every little thing. But we wish him well. We wish him well because if he does well in America, the knock-on effect for the world is, you know, very positive. So that's him. We're not talking to that man yet. No, we're not. No, we'll talk to him. We'll talk to him later on. The man who's putting Bernie Sanders in front of houses all over the world. Already we're seeing a difference in approach. When Donald Trump was elected back in 2016, Sean Spicer, well, he was elected and then he was inaugurated in 2017. But Sean Spicer was the first White House press secretary. And, you know, you remember, yeah, Sean Spicer, he was sort of aggressive. He was aggressive.
Some members of the media were engaged in deliberately false reporting.
Yeah. See, he was aggressive. What were they saying, Sean?
This was the largest audience to ever witness an inauguration, period.
There you go. And he kept going.
That's what you guys should be writing and covering.
See, now, this time, just, you know there's obviously a difference. There's a huge difference between the approaches of the presidents. And similarly, the White House press secretary is reflecting that difference of culture. So Joe Biden talking about unity and he wants to be all inclusive. And Jen Psaki, P-S-A-K-I, is the White House press secretary. And she was talking yesterday and she was talking about the new approach and how things are going to go between the White House and the press.
There will be times when we see things differently in this room.
Well, that's the way the world is. Not everybody thinks the same. Anything else to say, Jen?
That's okay. That's part of our democracy.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. See, that makes complete sense. Back to Jen.
The importance of bringing truth and transparency back to the briefing room.
Ah, truth and transparency. Will we hear those two words ever again from a White House press secretary or even an American president? Fake news, fake news, fake news, fake news. No, we won't. We won't. So when they were saying goodbye, this is how Sean said goodbye.
That's what you guys should be writing and covering.
Oh, we heard that already. Sean, say goodbye.
I will see you on Monday.
Jen, say goodbye.
Let's do this again tomorrow.
Thank you, Jen. You can even hear it. There's a lightness. Now, it is her first day, so there's always this enthusiasm and a lightness. And then when they're worn down by the reality of American politics. So we'll come back to her in 3 weeks' time and see how she's sounding. Jen Psaki, the new White House press secretary. We have him. Nick Sawney. How are you doing, Nick?
I'm just good, Ray. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So Nick, will you tell people what you've done?
Well, I made a website where you can put Bernie Sanders anywhere you want in the world, and it seems like people really like it. And I've just been staying up all night trying to get live.
Okay, it's a very bad line, Nick. So I'll ask you a couple of questions, see how we go. How many people have used your website over the last 18 hours or so?
I'm not sure if you remember, but the
No,
about 30.
No, we'll try and get Nick back up. Nick, back, yeah. Now, Lord rest Gerry Kiernan. So very sorry to hear this. I trained in a gym in the early 80s in Rathmines, and Gerry was a very active member there, a lovely man. So sorry to hear this very sad news. My condolences to a family and friends, says Anne. And what sad news, Ray? Gerry was a teacher in St. Bridget's School in Fox Rock. I have such fond memories of him being a cool dude in our school in the 70s. We all loved when he was on yard duty, as he had a smile and a laugh with all of us. Therese and Landor in West Cork, remembering Gerry Kiernan. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Tula McKay and the RTE Concert Orchestra and their version of N17. And that's gone to the top of the charts today. And we'll be talking to Tolu in a moment about that. But first, back to New York we go. And the man who has allowed you to put Bernie Sanders in his anorak and his mittens and his face mask in front of your house, if you care to do so, is back on the line. How are you doing, Nick Sawney? Hello again.
Hi again, Ray. How are you?
Good.
Can you hear me all right?
Yes, you can do all that, and yet we can't get a good line from you from here to New York, but that's the way technology is. Okay, I'm just looking. People have put it in front of a famous landmark in Ireland. It's called the Naas Ball. See, in Ireland, when we build a new piece of road, there's funding for a piece of architecture, and this is a famous one. It's a sort of, it's a spherical thing, and there's bits of road all over it. So there's Bernie has appeared in front of that. There's a nail bar in Dublin called Tropical Popicle. They've put Bernie outside theirs, as if he's waiting to get a manicure when the shop reopens after lockdown. So it's taken off. It's taken off. So how did it come about, Nick?
Joking around with my friends, we thought that picture of Bernie was really funny, and so did Twitter. And everybody in the country, in my opinion, was in a good mood because of Biden's inauguration. And so we were just having some fun with each other. And I thought, hey, let me just like see if it's possible to make a website where you just throw Bernie in places. And so I had a free hour to kill, and I just put together a really, really simple website and then spent another half hour testing it. And just posted it on Twitter for my friends. And a few people retweeted it. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And then a few more people retweeted it. And the next thing I know, I'm up all night. Like, my house is on fire. I'm trying to get the site running, stop it from just completely exploding. And it was like, it was really fun. I haven't slept in a while and just trying to keep it going because people seem to be having a good time.
So you're using Street View from Google Maps, obviously.
Yes.
Yes.
So the way it works is every time someone wants to put Bernie Sanders somewhere, my site sends a request to Google Street View.
Oh, Street View,
And then Google Street View handles, yeah, and they handle sending back, you know, the picture of wherever you want it to be. And every time they do that, they also charge me some money for using their service. So along with this website, I've also set up a little crowdfunding situation where people can send me $5 just to say they like what I'm doing. Right. And so far, the site has completely just run off of those donations.
Okay.
Right. I can't afford to keep it running myself.
Yeah. What's your story? What do you do? What's your day job?
I'm a grad student. I graduated at a very unfortunate time into the pandemic.
Yeah.
And decided to stay in school. And I really like software engineering and data science. I also do some research in, like, politics stuff using data. And so I'm very into politics, too. And so this kind of was just, like, a good timing of things.
Yes.
Where everyone was talking about Bernie and it seems like they enjoyed putting him in places.
And you're saying everybody is in good mood, in your opinion, yesterday. as much as you can, what's the mood among your friends?
We are happy, of course, that the Trump administration is gone. And we're also really happy, in undergrad, I majored in politics, and so did most of my friends. And we're all really happy that Biden seems to be taking some concessions from progressives. He's listening to the quote-unquote leftists about climate change and hopefully about immigration and these kinds of things. Hopefully he's going to give us stimulus checks. But we're still watching. We really want the most out of this administration. And so I think there's optimism, but there's cautious optimism because we know that, like, if we don't really push hard for the things that we want, this administration could fail to like really push us forward, and we might just stay the same.
Okay.
And so we're happy, but we're definitely looking at it.
Yeah.
A little bit critically.
We have tweeted the link to your website out there, so if people want to go on, they can put Bernie Sanders anywhere in Ireland or anywhere in the world, for that matter, if it's on Google Street View. And you, as a 20-year-old, we listened with interest, of course, yesterday to the inaugural speech, an awful lot about unity and an awful lot about the division that exists in America. As a 20-year-old, you know, graduate, did you get? Could you sense that?
I definitely like sense that Biden has put unity at the forefront of like his messaging. And I think that's really good to a certain extent. You know, I still don't believe that we need to be finding a middle ground with like QAnon. You know, I don't think we need to find a middle ground with a disconnect from reality. I think a better use of the term unity is like in the sense of bringing everyone down to earth and back to reality, you know, like we need to fix the way that we talk about things and the way that people get information more so than we need to concede to the people that are disconnected from reality.
Yeah, but Nick, you and your generation are the people who can fix that. Because
I believe so.
Yeah, but like for too long, too many people with a lot of power have been infatuated by the big tech companies. And they've far too much power, and we need to right that wrong as a planet. It's not just an American problem.
Absolutely. And, you know, I, as somebody who works in tech, it surprises people, but a lot of us also feel this way. You know, people that work in tech initially did this because it was small companies and it was a fun collaborative atmosphere and all that. And then in the past 10 years, we've kind of seen capitalism take its hold on these big companies. And it turns into mining people for their data and things like that. And I think the incentive structure of the industry has completely shifted in a way that, like, is really, like, the big tech companies are incentivized to be taking our data and manipulating us in all these ways.
Yes.
And it's up to engineers who know how that platform works to change it to be more equitable. But I think we also need regulation, because companies will not do things that they're not incentivized to do.
Well, I don't know if you know about that department in Stanford University, which is solely aimed towards teaching people how to keep customers online. What, do you know that? Are you familiar with that?
I don't remember the name right now, but this is like very common in the field of data science in general. They change the way these apps work by testing, you know, on us, what keeps us on them for longer.
Yeah.
And I know that that's a huge field. Like the term data science is kind of hurt, I think, by the focus on ad tech. I think we can use it for more productive policy focus things.
Well, there you go. You're the future, Nick.
thanks.
When you stop putting Bernie Sanders outside people's houses, you might concentrate on changing the big tech world. Nick Sawney, thanks very much for talking to us. Thanks, Nick. See you. Bye.
Thank you so much, Ray. It's an honour.
Bye. And an honour, I doubt it. But if you want a bit of fun this afternoon, we've tweeted out Nick's website, and you can put Bernie Sanders outside your house. Now, our quiz of today. Yes. Today is the 21st of the 1st, 2021. There's a lot of twos and a lot of ones there. It's a very binary date. And we've cobbled together 10 questions on things that happened on this day over the years. And we need two people to answer 5 questions each. There's the maths and the figures. And we have a great prize to give away. It's a 2-night stay in the Farnham Estate Spa and Golf Resort, which is situated on a 1,300-acre estate. Mature woodlands, lakes to explore, and you can find out more at farnhamestate.ie. So if you want to be in with a chance to win that, answer this question. Name the First Lady of the United States of America. Can you name the new First Lady of the United States of America? 1850-715-900. That's 1850-715-900. And we could be talking to you after 4 o'clock.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 or ray@rte.ie. Some surprise and shock in the world of Irish racing today. David Mullins, who won the Grand National at Aintree back in 2016, announced his retirement from the horse racing industry at the age of just 24. David's surname is synonymous with racing. His uncle is Willie Mullins, his dad is Tom, and David's on the line. How are you doing, David?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
You're not retiring from the horse racing industry. That's wrong. You're retiring as a jockey.
Yeah, retiring as a jockey. Yeah. Definitely not from the horse racing industry. Not at all.
Yeah, I just looked back at your win of the Aintree Grand National, one of the great horse races in the world. And at the age of 19, you won that. You know, talk to us about that. What did that feel like?
And the Grand National was obviously special. It's the biggest race you can win over jumps. It's the pinnacle of any jockey's career, really. It's the most prize money. It's the biggest stage. It's the greatest spectacle. To win it was unbelievable. Probably didn't appreciate it at 19. Maybe a bit spoiled. But that's the way it goes. And it was definitely a memory now that I'll never forget, and it's great to have.
A huge achievement that early in your career, David.
Yeah, definitely. I was only talking about Nicky English texted me today to wish me the best, and it was a year before that, 363 days before that, I hadn't rode a winner over fences. Wow. So never mind to go from normal fences to the Aintree Grand National in less than a year with very, very little experience.
And ruled the world had never won over fences before.
Yeah, well, I suppose we were paired rightly, so.
Yeah, yeah. Two novices. You weren't the youngest ever to win the Grand National, but I'd say you're in the top 10 there of young jockeys.
Second youngest.
Second youngest. And you had to go back to 1938 to get the youngest, didn't you?
Yeah. There were different rules back then.
So they must have been heady days. I'm trying to just get a sense of that around 2016. They must have been heady days, the amount of attention you were getting.
Yeah, got plenty of attention. It was great. All was said, though, there's been plenty of jockeys have retired after the National. Never got much more opportunities or things just didn't work out for them. I've got plenty. I actually got offered to go on the Late Late Show with Mouse Morris, with his story about his son and everything that had died just recently before it. And I had to turn it down to go and ride one horse in Ballinrobe. And that's the jockey's lifestyle. I said I didn't want to let one race define me, you know.
Okay.
So I don't think it has.
You didn't want the Grand National to define you?
No, not really.
That's interesting. That's interesting. I suppose, you know, right across successful people, you know, a singer has one song or an actor has one movie that everybody wants to talk to them about. That's the nature of life, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I didn't want that to be me. So that's why I decided... So I go to Ballinrobe and try and do all those things as a jockey.
Yeah, and you've had over 200 winners or rides, which you better correct me there if I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah, since so how long have you been grappling with leaving it all behind you?
About a year and a half now. You know, you try things and it's great going and riding all around the country and up and down the country, but the crack wears out of that. When you can't really see a future in it. I got into racing from being bitten by a bug, which a lot of jockeys and a lot of people in racing do, and that was going to the sales with my father.
Right.
And seeing young horses progressing, and that's what I'm going to revert back to where the bug all started from.
Right. I've spoken to a number of jockeys over the years, and winning in front of a crowd, they describe as a drug. And you become addicted to it.
Yeah. I suppose I don't have an addictive personality anymore, do I?
No, but I suppose the thing is, how are you going to fill that void?
How will I replace it? I don't know. I love buying and selling horses. I get as good a kick out
do
of
you?
That.
Yeah.
I love following horses that I've maybe couldn't even afford and keep an eye on them. And and see where they've ended up. But that's as I said, that's where I got the bug from, and that's what I hope.
That's what you're going back to.
Yeah.
Of course, the other thing is about the Grand National, win like that is you know. And speaking of addiction, it's chasing a high. You know, chasing that high that you got after the Grand National. Is that part of it?
There is, but there's plenty of lows, you know, from the Grand National to not riding a winner in Punchestown a couple of weeks later, and then a dry summer followed. It wasn't until next year I rode a couple of Grade 1 winners, and that kind of got me back going, and the next year a few more again. But, you know, there is long intervals in between all those days.
And a lot of sacrifice, David. Like, I remember being in a sauna with a guy. He was wasting. And he was literally trying to rub the weight off himself in the sauna.
Yeah. I was lucky now. I've never had too many problems with my weight. But there's plenty of guys that put themselves through hardship and have a lot of stuff to lose. A lot of stuff comes out through their body to get down to ride horses.
And did you make a lot of sacrifices? Did you miss out on things, do you think?
I did. I always felt like racing kind of held me back.
Apart from the Late Late Show. going on.
Yeah, it's a funny word. Like you don't know. There's racing this Saturday and Sunday. I won't know today if I'm riding or not. I can't plan things. You can't do anything like that. You have to be on call whether you're going to get a ride or you're not going to get a ride.
Yeah.
That kind of bugged me because you're never able to go down another path and see if you do like something or see if something else is for you. Even during the summer, it's our busiest months of the year. And you know they're lesser horses. They're not big festivals. And it's tough going. It can be tough going. Yeah.
So there's a lot more of the tough stuff than there is of the glamour.
Definitely, without a doubt.
And what's the sort of success rate with jockeys? You know, like how many lads and girls would make a decent enough living out of it?
I don't know any of the figures now, but I could say there's a. I could say maybe the top 10% and the rest wouldn't survive on what they make on the racetrack. They have to be doing bits and bobs in between and riding out for a wage in the mornings before they go racing. There's very few that would make a living on riding alone on the racetrack.
For a lot of lads and girls who choose a career as a jockey, it's you know, it's a way out of, you know, they're probably from working class backgrounds, and it's a bit like aspiring to be a professional footballer. You know, isn't it? There's a lot of people like that. So they're very driven.
Very driven. And as people have said before, Rachel Blackmore, she only kind of got going. I think she turned professional at 24, you know.
Yeah.
She had to work very hard to get from where she was to where she is now. And probably one of the hardest working talents of the game. And, you know, it's she loves it. She enjoys it. And it's you can see that coming out in her work because you wouldn't do it if you didn't.
Yeah. So you're from a sort of a horse racing dynasty. Your uncle's Willie Mullins. Your dad, Tom, is a trainer as well. And did you talk to them? Did they try and convince you to stay at it? Or
No. I had one conversation with my mother. I had a few conversations with my mother about it. She knew it wasn't really for me. She wouldn't say yes or no because you don't want to put somebody, you know, you don't want to live with them making your decisions for you. So when I made the decision, I told people myself. I just ran it by them. I wasn't asking.
Right. Do you ever watch the Grand National back?
No, not really.
Do you not?
It's 10 minutes long.
Yeah, I know. But if you go to YouTube, there's a minute of it there, and Ruby Walsh is advertising something before it.
Yeah. Like most things, he's getting a plug in everywhere.
Yeah, and you wore the maroon colours of Mouse Morris with the white star.
Yeah, Michael O'Leary.
They still have those silks.
I think there's been people looking for them. All right, I'm not going to incriminate myself.
Right. Okay. That's another day's story. Oh, so you're back to horse stealing. So you're not leaving it. Thanks so much for taking some time out to talk to us, and good luck with whatever you're doing in the future. Do you think there'll be a day where you'll be watching the telly and you'll go, "Oh no, I made the wrong decision"?
There definitely won't. But
no. Okay. Yeah, right. No, okay. No. Right. You're definite. You're definite. David, mind 100%. Yourself. Okay. See you. Bye.
Thanks very much.
Bye. 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 Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, now we played N17 by Tolu Mackay and the RTE Concert Orchestra at the beginning of the show, and I announced that it's number one on iTunes, and we decided we'd put a call in to Tolu to say congratulations. How are you doing, Tolu?
I'm great. Hello, Ray. How are you?
Good. Congratulations. You're coming to us live from Tullamore.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's amazing, isn't it? There's been such a positive reaction to the...
It's been so overwhelming. I still don't even have words. Like, I only got the news that I was, like, number one this morning, so I'm still even, like, freaking shocked, you know?
Yeah. Just remind people about, because not everybody saw the New Year's Eve show on RTE, but your rendition of N17 was one of the standout moments. So how did it all happen?
Yeah, so a friend of mine, Susan Scanlon, she's part of the cut production that filmed it. And so she was like, here, you know what song would be good for you? You know, Saw Doctors, N17. And I was like, oh, all right, let's do that then. And then I got in contact through Gavin Murray from the concert orchestra. And he, like, arranged the orchestra piece. And this is all, like, done through WhatsApp, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, sent me the orchestra piece. And I'm here, like, trying to learn the lyrics all over again with this new rendition. And it took me, like, a whole week because it was so different from the original. I mean, like, anyone that has heard, like, the original Saw Doctors.
Oh, they know it. They know it, okay.
You know.
Now, we've a very poor line there. Is Owen ready to go? Owen's ready to go. We'll try and get Tolu. We're not having a great day with lines today. We'll try and get Tolu back on a better line. But meanwhile, tonight is episode 3 of How to Be Good with Money, and discusses downsizing. Owen McGee is on the line. How are you doing, Owen?
I'm good. It's great to be a stand-in there for a minute.
No, but you're not a stand-in. We were going to talk to you anyway. But that's the world we live in. I'd love to have you sitting in front of me and Tolu sitting in front of me and Tolu singing live and all those things. And we will return to a day when all that will happen. But for the moment, we're down to Facebook Live audio and all sorts of things. And you're coming in loudly and clearly. I've probably hexed it there. But anyway, good to talk to you. Now, before we get into tonight's programme and downsizing and all that, just commiserations on the death of your dad, because I met your dad Michael. He was on the TV show and he was just this larger than life big personality man, and you had a lovely relationship, the two of you. I remember, did he put his head on your shoulder opposite, or there was a lovely moment?
He did, yeah. He's a big part of my career, and he will remain being a big part of my career. But he's had, for anyone who remembers when I was on the show, which on the TV show with your Ray, I told the story about the fact that he had his first bypass in 1982. And up until the 7th of December, he was the longest post open heart surgery survivor in Ireland.
Right.
And it was his heart in the end. That's what got him. And he just deteriorated last year. And we had a tough year with him. But it was his time, and it was time for him to go. And I saw he got home for a couple of days. He went in October, got home for a couple of days in November. When I seen him at home in November, and I just saw the quality of life he had, I just didn't think it was right for him. 78 years of age.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's tough. Like,
yeah, it
somebody
tough.
Described it. Somebody described it to me, like, a rugby player from the age of 6 trains and practices and works out for the big hits, and they go out every Saturday and they take a big hit, and next Saturday they're expecting a big hit, but when it hits them, it's a surprise and it hurts.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great description of what this feels like right now. So yeah, he's a big part of me. He's a big part of my career. Big loss to the family, but you know what? He had a long, long time that he didn't. Probably wasn't entitled to, maybe is the word. Like, 1982 was a long time ago to have a quadruple bypass.
And so he was the longest living, surviving.
I've never actually got that confirmed.
Okay.
That's what they told him in James. Because I think about it, 1982 to 2020,
yes.
It's a 38-year period. And he had another bypass in 1988 as well. And he's lots of stents. Like, we're trying to figure out. I reckon he's had maybe 30, 40, 50 stents over the years. And my brother started the eulogy, actually. And he said that and it was obviously a very quiet funeral, but he started the eulogy with, I was in the hospital with Dad, and Dad said, look, this is going to be it. This is, we need to prepare for the end. And that was 1993.
But you see, what I was going to say to you, and that sort of is interesting, because it obviously coloured how he lived his life, having that major surgery, you know, in 1982.
It coloured all of our lives. Like, it coloured how he lived his life. He lived his life to the full. He gave up work at 50 because he had income protection, which was something we talked about, and he was able to financially, because he had got financial advice and he was able to do that.
Yeah.
And he gave up work at 50 years of age. And he was just such a member of the community. He was such a member. He got very involved in anything. He really did everything to the fullest. And yeah. that was very important for him. But it also, like, I was a teenager. I was 10 years of age, actually, when he stopped working. And all of a sudden, I had, like, a house husband that cooked me breakfast in the morning. And it gave me a real balance on life. And he was someone who I absolutely looked up to and I admired. And even though he stopped working at 50, the work ethic that he instilled in me was incredible. Like, it's because he worked with Sister Stan, he worked with the school, unfortunately for me, he worked in the secondary school. He like, there's been so many things have come back to us since he's passed away, and it's been some really great tributes. And then my mother got a phone call on Christmas Eve from Sabina Higgins, and Michael D wrote to her, and things like that are lovely things to be getting as well. And it's great for my they were neighbours in Galway.
That's mad. I think that was mentioned. I think you mentioned that to me before. Yeah, so they were neighbours.
Yeah.
So it was a personal thing. It was not a sort of a political thing.
No, it was a personal thing. Yeah. And he's some brilliant. Ray, people wouldn't know, right? But me and you and my dad were sitting on the couch on your TV show, and the interview finished, and you turned to camera, and you were giving something away, and you said, "And for everybody who's here tonight, we have I think it was flax seeds or something silly, right?" And my dad turns around and goes, "I'm not in the audience. I won't get any flax seeds." you sorted them out, Ray. Don't worry.
He got his flax seeds. Yeah, or it could have been a box of Kills crisps or anything. Yeah, that's the nature of it. Huh? Yeah, fond memories. He was just a lovely man. And there was a noticeably beautiful relationship between you and him, because that's not a given, and you can see through it if it's contrived and it's put on for the cameras. It was a very real thing. So commiserations. He'll be sadly missed. I can hear that. So downsizing, this is the thing that people talk about. So you get to your 50s, 60s or 70s in my case, and the kids have gone. And so you're rattling around the house as people, and you have empty nest syndrome. And you might be able to turn that house into security, financial security for your retirement. So that's Bernie and Eugene's story tonight.
Yeah. And it's a great story that we were very lucky to get an insight into, because lots of people do this. Lots of people do this wrong, by the way, Ray. Lots of people decide, okay, I'm ready to get rid of this big house. I want something more manageable. I want to be able to be either closer or in where it tends to go around is further away from amenities, where they trade down. And actually what you need to do and what you need to decide from the very start is, what are you trying to achieve by selling the house? Is it reduced maintenance? Is it a lump of cash? Or is it both?
Right.
Because oftentimes what happens, people say, it's cash. And they tell themselves it's maintenance, but it's the money that's the important thing to them. And what they find is that, let's say they're living in Galway or Dublin or Cork or Limerick or one of the main city areas. And they say, it's about the cash really, but I'll convince myself it's about maintenance. And what happens is they start moving out and out and out and out and out further from the city.
Yeah.
And what happens in order to get the same size house for less money. And then they end up out where their life, and it's different for someone who has grown up in that environment or has been there for many years. They're accustomed to, when you go for an appointment in the hospital, it's a half day or it's a day or it's a big chunk of your time. Whereas if you're living inside in town somewhere or one of the big cities, you're all of a sudden, you're saying, at a time when maybe you become a little bit more reliant on hospitals and appointments and other things, all of a sudden you're out in the sticks. So you do need to make sure that you decide from the outset what it is and why the reasons you're doing it are, because maintenance is a big problem for people in latter life. We would have clients in private practice who have just fed up with it and they just want an apartment and they just want to be able to enjoy other things in life. And Bernie and Eugene are an interesting story because they had a lovely house on the lake in Blessington. They were looking out at the lake, a big house. And they have said, no, we want to be more convenient to things. We want to be in the town, in the village of Blessington. Someone will give out to me about those comments, but they want to be in Blessington itself. And that's what they're trying to achieve. And they've some really bad luck. Like when I first meet them, they've fallen through on three houses, I think it is, at that stage. And they're renting because their house is sold and it's costing them money to rent. And I look at the finances going, oh God, there's a hole happening here. And we won't tell exactly what
happened.
No,
but I suppose what people need to know, because they'll be interested in knowing this, is by downsizing, then you're paying off your mortgage, then you have a lump sum to buy a new house, and the aim is to be mortgage free.
Yes,
because what's going to happen more and more, yeah, as we get older as a country, and also because big long mortgages were given to people, weren't they, back in, there still, yeah, probably are 25, 30 year mortgages, so people are going, yeah, to be hitting retirement age and still have mortgage repayments, and that's a recipe for disaster.
Absolutely. And it's not unusual for people to be listening to the show now and they might be thinking, when is my mortgage finished? And 70 years of age wouldn't be unusual, like, right, at all. And even if your job says your pension kicks in at 65, if you're lucky enough to have a pension, remember, only one third of the private sector have a pension. But 65, if your pension kicks in, you could still have 5 years left in your mortgage. Some, yeah, people did manage to get them across the line longer than 70 years of age. And what you're hoping to achieve is, yeah, a bit of cash, but to clear up your finances. And if you can do it with a bit of career runway left in you, you can really take advantage of it.
Go on, explain that to me. Yeah.
What I mean by that is that imagine you are paying out, I don't know, 2,000 euros a month, and I'm taking a random figure here, right? You're paying out 2,000 euros a month on loans, right? And you sell the house, you clear off the loans, you have a bit of cash in the bank, you buy the cheaper house, and you're still left with a bit of cash in the bank. Now you've got 2,000 euros a month that can go towards other things, and people are going to turn off the radio now when I say the word pension.
Pensions!
But it is. That's the thing. Like, the reality is in people overly make pensions overly complicated. The reality is, if you put 1,000 euros into your pension today, you pay 400 euros less than tax. You get 400 euro back from the tax man. And people, if I told you, Ray, that, you know what, Ray, there's this new scheme and it's been introduced in Europe and we're all going to be able to sign up for it and this is what it's going to look like, you'd all be running, everybody be running for it. But when it's on our doorstep, and it's got some bad press in the past, and it's just because of how investments go. But what I mean by the runway is, when you do this and you do it right, if you've got a bit of career left in you, if you've got like 10 years of career left in you, you've got 10 years of 2,000 euros a month that you can do something different with instead of just paying back your bank.
And you would suggest you put it into a pension fund.
It needs to be spread out across a couple of different things. Pension is a big part of it because it's the biggest leg up from the government we can get. Like, think about it. If 10 euros, putting 10 euros into pension and getting 4 euros back if you're on the higher rate of tax, or 10 euros into pension and getting 2 euros. Imagine, you were talking to your jockey there a minute ago. Imagine I was able to walk into the bookies next Saturday morning, put 6 euros down and be guaranteed to walk back in at lunchtime and get 10 euros back. Like, we'd all
be
doing it.
Yeah.
Like, even SSIAs, we all love the SSIAs.
Yes, yeah.
That was 8 euros into 10.
They were hugely popular. And there's the thing, you might be able to answer this question, because of lockdown, people who are lucky enough to have jobs aren't spending as much money because they can't go out, can't go on holidays, et cetera, et cetera. So there's this build-up of savings. So you would suggest to people who are listening who are lucky enough to be in that situation, if they're of a certain age, to put it into a pension.
Yeah, I'm sorry. A certain age doesn't... I'll take the word certain age out of that sentence.
Okay, sorry. Any age.
It's never too early and it's never too late to start a pension. And let's put numbers on those savings, right? There are certain people in the country who are really suffering financially. And that's a really difficult place. They don't know where their next pay packet's coming from. They might be getting PUP or they might be getting some other social welfare benefit. But there are 2 million people in this country who are better off as a result of COVID. Their salary has stayed the same and their expenses have fallen through the floor. And that's reflected in our savings numbers. We have over 123 billion in savings right now. Right? Now, in an ordinary month, we save households. Now, this is not businesses. It's just people, right? In an ordinary month, we save 443 million euro. That's an average month. In April last year, the first proper month of lockdown one, in April, we saved 3,000 million. 3 billion euro is what we saved.
When you say saved, people put it into a bank or into a savings account.
Into a bank, just bank accounts.
Where they're getting next to nothing return on it.
Absolutely. And that's the big problem with it is they are getting next to nothing. And if you think about it, the European Central Bank use interest rates. And what do they use interest rates? The only mandate they have, the only thing they're allowed to use interest rates for is to control inflation. And inflation, the goal for the European Central Bank is to use interest rates to keep inflation at 2%. So that means if something costs 100 euros today, it's going to cost 102 euros in a year's time.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what the European Central Bank's job is, to try and use interest rates. If you put it into a bank account, if you get 0.1 or 0.2, it's going to, your money is going to be worth 100 euro and 20 cent or 10 cent.
Yes.
Right? You are losing money and you're guaranteed to lose money.
You're losing 180 if there's a 102.
And this is the thing. And that's okay in the short term, but not over the long term.
Okay.
So there's a huge amount of money there. And what people don't realize is if you've got money in your bank account, PAYE workers might be getting hit with COVID bills at the moment. They're on their wage subsidy and their taxes and stuff. You can still put money in to your pension for last year. And if you put 1,000 euros in for last year and you're on the higher rate of tax, you will reduce your tax bill by 400 euro.
There you go. And so if you're sitting on savings, and obviously, as you say, a lot of people are, consider investing it in a pension. And there's more about that tonight on How to Be Good with Money on RTE One. Owen McGee, thank you so much and commiserations again. Thanks, Owen.
Thanks,
you.
Right.
Tolu is back on a better line from Tullamore. Tolu in Tullamore. How are you doing, Tolu?
I'm good. Can you hear me now?
Yes, yes. It's not a brilliant line, but it's a better line.
Okay.
So you were telling me that Susan Scannell, a friend of yours, she suggested you sing this. And the problem is, this is what's really entertaining for me, is that you couldn't get the original out of your head. So it took you a week to learn
it. Took me a while to like actually get the new rendition that Gavin Murray from the orchestra made for me. And this was all like through WhatsApp, because you know you have to adapt to the times with COVID and restrictions.
So
didn't even meet them until the day that I had to perform.
No, there you go, gone again. I was just about to tell her that it's a happy coincidence today, Tolu, because Damien Chanel, who was involved in the recording of the song, is working on the show today as our sound engineer. She's gone.
Okay. Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can now. I can. We're having a nightmare with phone lines
it's
today.
Okay.
Did you hear me say that Damien Chanel, who recorded the song, is our sound? Because we're having a nightmare. It's not to do with him. It's just the telecommunications system is letting us down today. So he's working on it, and it was the RTE orchestra, all done remotely, and which is brilliant to think, and it sounds so good. This has launched you into a nearly international. Graham Norton was tweeting about you.
Yeah, it's crazy. I don't even know. But like, I still haven't even sat down with my emotions to even like digest what has happened so far in just January. Like, we're not even at the end of it. And all of this amazing news and reaction and positivity has just boosted me to another level.
Yeah. Yeah, well deserved.
Thank you.
So keep doing what you're doing, and congratulations on being number one on iTunes. And
Woo!
Go Tolu and Tullamore. See you, Tolu.
All right.
And listen, will you do us a favor? When we're at the other side of this, will you come into Studio 10 and do a session for us?
Absolutely.
Okay. Right. See you then. See you, Tolu.
Right,
bye. Grandma, good call. Thank you very much. 5155 on RadioRTE.ie. Did you know that at 9 o'clock tonight it will be the 21st hour of the 21st day of the 21st year of the 21st century? Did you get that? So tonight, 21, 21, 21, 21. So if you're a numerologist, or those sort of things are important to you, it's a big day. It's a big day for you. Tom Kennedy has been on. He says, enjoying the Bernie website, Ray. I've put Bernie outside some of the 7 public houses in Ballylongford. Is that in Kerry? Ballylongford's County Kerry, isn't it? Mike O'Carroll's Bar, the Horse and Hound and Finucane's Bar, birthplace of the O'Rahilly of the 1916 Rising fame. I also put him at the bottom entrance of O'Rahilly Park, Ballylongford's GA pitch. He's mad to watch a Gaelic game here, is Bernie. Also, I put him outside my uncle's bar, Kennedy's in Askeaton, as he got thirsty travelling the N69 road on the way to Ballylongford, known in Ballylongford as the Road of the Full Mouth. The N69. That's Tom Kennedy there. And he sends up the picture of Bernie there. Slightly out of scale. That's the problem. You see, it depends on, Google Street View and how they've shot it. Bernie looks like a giant in that one. But it's a bit of crack. It's a bit of crack. We've tweeted that out there if you want to do it. Eve has been on as well. This started text as a text, and mid-type I changed it to an email due to the importance of this message. Ooh, I'm excited. Please, please, please stock more brats. I'm completely in agreement with the lack of broth availability on the Irish menus. I lived in Spain for many years. There's a soup. It's typically more broth-like, and the soup, as we know it, is called a puree.
Ready-made broths are available in tetra brick type cartons and are so handy. This is in Spain. Here I make my own chicken broth using leek, carrot, celery, onion and a whole chicken and leave it simmering in a large pot for 2 to 3 hours. A new ingredient I've started adding is miso paste and some chili flakes. Brings it to a whole new level. And some noodles eat with chopsticks and it becomes ramen. Is it ramen or ramen? How do you say it? Ramen or ramen? Ramen, thank you very much, which is another variation of the marvellous broth. Well, we were talking to James Cavanagh yesterday and William from Corribini, and they were saying that they've given us a broth and we've put that up online and there is miso paste in that and there's also some lemon as well, lemon zest. So they're on the same page as you, Aoife. Big broth fans. Now, our quiz of today. Fingers crossed that we can talk to our quizzers the way things are going. Yeah. Today, 21st of January, as you know, great prize, Farnham Estate in County Cavan, set on 1,300 acres. And you get 2 nights stay and dinner on one of the evenings. Farnhamestate.ie for more details. John Flanagan is in Terenure. Hello, John.
Hi, how are you doing?
Oh, brilliant, you're there and you sound clear. That's it's the small things that matter today. So turn your there's people in the background there. Who's in the background?
The kids are in the background. They're okay. Still watching TV.
All right, okay. So what ages are they?
Rafa is 5 and Ayla is 3.
Right. So there wouldn't be a lot of homeschooling going on there, was there?
Well, the five-year-old, there's homeschooling going on 10 o'clock every morning for 40 minutes.
Right, that's it, yeah. And yourself, both yourself and your wife are nurses?
Yeah, both of us are working nurses, yeah.
Right, I was reading a book last night, we're having a man on next week called David Goodhart, and a large portion of his book is about nursing and you know how it's gone to degree level and all that sort of thing. But there's only something like 10% of nurses are men.
That's right, yeah. It's exclusively women, really, to be honest. Maybe that's why we're paid so lowly.
That's his theory. That's his theory, exactly. You should have written the book. We'll talk to you instead.
maybe. Yeah, it's very unfair.
Yeah, that's his thesis, exactly. Isn't that mad? that it's undervalued, the whole nursing thing, and caring in general is undervalued in society. And the reason he... you know, argues is because it's predominantly done by women.
Yeah, hopefully it will be more valued after this crisis is over. Like, you know, definitely something needs to be looked into, I think.
Well, it definitely does. And they need to follow up on all the things they've said during lockdown, don't they? Our politicians.
Yeah, absolutely. Or else they're just words.
Yeah, there you go, just words. So are either of you in the front line?
Well, I'm a substance misuse nurse in a prison, and my wife, she's a midwife, so she's pretty much on the front line. Like, we're not too bad at the moment. We've fared quite well so far, like, you know. So
right, and we were talking to a lady a couple of weeks ago, and her husband was nursing as well, and they pass like ships in the night. Do you get a lot of?
Yeah, we're pretty much the same. Like, you know, so, I mean, sometimes our workplaces are quite good. My wife works part time, like, you know, so it can be a bit of a juggle, all right. Like, you know,
that's a fascinating area you work in, substance abuse nursing.
Yeah. I've kind of always worked in it, even before the prison. Like, it's kind of an area I just got interested in, I guess, like, you know, from the start when I started training.
Yeah, I won't ask you why, because that's a bigger story for another day, but I'm sure it's an interesting one. Okay,
yeah.
John Flanagan, turn you're up against Ian O'Reilly in Douglas and County Cork. How are you doing, Ian?
Hey, Ray, how are you doing, man?
Not too bad. What's your story? You're WFH, I believe.
Yep, like... I'm glad of it.
Because it was interesting last week that the government are saying there's going to be rights around working from home and people will be able to ask their employer. Will you be one of the people who would like it to stay this way?
Actually, I would. But to be honest with you, you know, I'd love a day in the office because you'd miss the old crack and the social side of things, you know.
Yeah.
That's what you do miss. But working from home most days, you know, when you're busy, the day flies. So, but I would... like to get out of house one day a week at least.
Well, you see, there maybe it's a mix and match, isn't it? It's a bit of both.
I think that would work.
And all the studies say that that's the thing that people miss most, is the social interaction.
That's it, and being stuck in traffic as well, you know?
Yeah, well, they don't miss that. Yeah. Do you think, just in case your employers are listening, you better give me a positive answer to this. Do you think you're more productive working from home?
Incredibly so.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. No, I suppose prior to COVID, I would probably have worked a day or two from home anyway because of my job, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I believe when you're at work. Oh, your daughter. Sorry, she's at home as well. What age is she?
Well, she's 23 now. Yeah, so she's at home with Kiva and three dogs.
Right. And tell us about where Kiva works.
Well, Kiva works in the creche in Besborough in Cork. So, very happy place. She loves working there, especially. Given all the misery that we're listening to on the news at the moment. So it's a good news that she works in the creche there and they have a fabulous time with the kids.
Is the creche on the site of
Best
for a Mother and Baby Home? Isn't that, isn't that mad?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's amazing.
And you know, the contrast between the lives of those children and the lives who were there before, or the lives of the children who were there before.
There's no comparison.
No, no.
There's no comparison, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. She loves it, and they bring joy, and that's the main thing. You
that's
know?
Lovely. Right, lads, five questions each. Whoever answers most correctly gets the prize. If we're in a draw at the end of it, we go to a tiebreak situation. Good luck to John in Terranure and Ian in Douglas. Here we go. Right, John, first question for you. On this day in 1874, Franz Grill Parser's play Libussa premiered in Vienna. Vienna is the capital city of which European country?
Vienna. Austria.
Correct answer. On this day in 1879, Henrik Ibsen's A Doll's House premiered in Copenhagen. Copenhagen is the capital city of which European country?
Denmark.
Correct answer. John, your next one is an audio one. Have a listen to this.
My mum always said, life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
On this day in 1995, at the 52nd Golden Globes, that actor you heard won the Best Actor Award for playing the title role in Forrest Gump. Can you name him?
Oh, jeez. God, he escapes me now.
Yeah. Not, Forrest Gump.
God, I'm crazy.
Tom Hanks, correct answer. What age are you, John?
I'm 48.
48, right, okay. Yeah, I was going to say it's before your time, but it wasn't before your time at all. have a listen to this.
Just one chance to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
Yay! And this day in 1996, at the 53rd Golden Globes, Ian Mel Gibson won the Best Director Award for directing that film you heard a clip from. Can you name it?
Braveheart.
Correct answer. Right, two all. Question number three for you, John. On this day in 1905, Christian Dior, fashion designer, was born. What nationality was Christian Dior? Italian or French?
French.
Correct answer. Ian, on this day in 1950, George Orwell, author of Animal Farm in 1984, died at the age of 46. What nationality was George Orwell? Was he British or American?
American.
He was British. Yeah. It was always going to be a guess there. Okay, so you're on two. John, you're on three. Your fourth question is an audio one. Here we go. There you go. On this day in 1950, that singer was born in Trinidad. Can you name him? Caribbean Queen. Need an answer from you? No.
No.
When the going gets tough, the tough get going. Billy Ocean. That's Billy Ocean. There you go, right. Ian, a chance for you to go level now. If you get this one right, have a listen. On this day in 1976, Emma Bunton, singer with that all-girl group, was born in London. Can you name the group?
Spice Girls.
Yeah,
and she has connections with Ferns in County Wexford as well, Emma Bunton. So it's 3-3, down to the wire. John, get this right, you put Ian under a good bit of pressure, get it wrong and then he's in a nice position. So good luck with this, John. On this day in 1973, actress Jane Fonda married activist Tom Hayden. What year was Jane Fonda born? 1937, 1940 or 1943?
Jane Fonda born. Real name again?
Jane Fonda. She married activist Tom Hayden. What year? 1937, 1940, 1943?
37.
Correct answer.
What?
Yeah, she's 83. And that guy Tom Hayden, he features in that Netflix movie. I think it's called The Chicago 7 or something. It's a very good movie. Highly recommend it from here. Right, Ian. John's on 4. You're on 3. You have one in hand. Good luck with this to bring us to a tiebreak situation. Former Irish rugby international Brian O'Driscoll was born on this day, but in what year was he born? 1976, 79 or 82?
What year? 79 is that?
Is the correct answer. 79, so that makes him, 42 this year. He's 42 today. Happy birthday, Brian O'Driscoll. Right, so that's 4-4, lads. Well done. So we asked you the tiebreaker question before you went on air, and whoever gets closest to the correct answer is our winner today and is off up to farnhamestate.ie. So the question, the first meeting of the First All was held on this day in 1919 in the Mansion House in Dublin. According to Google Maps, how long would it take to cycle from the Mansion House in Dublin to Gorey in County Wexford? If you had the inkling to do so. So Dublin to Gorey by bike, answer in hours and minutes. John, what did you say?
I said if I was chased, I'd be there in 8 hours.
Right, 8 hours. That was your... And what about you, Ian?
I think I said 3 hours and 5 minutes.
Yes, 3 hours and 5 minutes. Now, let's do the maths on this. Yeah, I think I have it here. Yeah. So the correct answer, lads, cycling from the Mansion House to Gorey is 4 hours and 34 minutes. Oh. It's 89 kilometres. So Ian O'Reilly, you're the closest. John Flanagan, sorry about that. John, we're going to send you out a Ray D'Arcy mug.
Brilliant. Thanks.
And you have your hands full there. I think there are people in the background who need your attention. So
yeah, absolutely.
Right. Good talking to you, John.
Sounds good.
Good to see you. See you. Slán. Bye. Bye. Ian, well done.
That was brilliant. I was already telling Emily I was waiting for a population question because that was the one I was always getting wrong.
Right. Okay. Right. And there were no population questions today. Well, you're off up to Farnham Estate. And if you want to prepare yourself and see what's in store for you, you can go to farnhamestate.ie.
That's brilliant.
Mind yourself, Ian. Good talking to you.
Thanks, Ray.
Bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good news for fans of Bridgerton. Lady Whistledown, who's voiced by Julie Andrews, has just released a press release, as they do. And she says, the incomparable cast of Bridgerton will return to production in the spring of 2021. This author has been reliably informed that Lord Anthony Bridgerton intends to dominate the social scene. I'll have my pen ready to report on any and all of his romantic activities. However, gentle reader, before you set the comments section alight with requests for more sordid details, know that I am disinclined to report on the particulars at this time. Patience, after all, is a virtue. Yours truly, Lady Whistledown. So there you go. People will be happy about that. Now, with more and more people working from home, like Ian there, spending a lot of time indoors, people probably want to brighten up the indoors and bring some of the outdoors inside. With that in mind, we put a call into Erin Thomas. She's the owner of Hopeless Botanics in Dublin 8. And she's on the line now. How are you doing, Erin?
Hi Ray, how's it going?
So this is your speciality, indoor plants.
Yes, I have a shop on Francis Street and we sell really beautiful indoor plants. And we also deliver them across Dublin, Meath, Wicklow and Kildare.
Right. Are you busy?
Yeah, surprisingly. I thought it was going to be really quiet, but our shop doors are closed, but we're doing loads of deliveries and... there's lots of lovely gifts and stuff going out. Yeah. People are sending nice gifts all the time, co-worker to co-worker and like mothers to their kids and stuff. So,
and it's a lovely thing to do. How did you get into this, Erin?
So I suppose I've been at home with my kids for the last 4 years, but I've always been really gardening obsessed. I love gardening so much. And then last year or the year before, you know, the gardening really winds down in autumn, and I was kind of looking for something to do, and I wanted to bring greenery inside into my house to kind of just, I suppose, I don't know, exercise my green thumb. And
yeah.
So I started to look around for really nice houseplants that I wanted, and I couldn't find what I wanted available. So I kind of started to think there was a bit of a niche there. But I had just had a baby, so I totally parked the idea. Stuff was bananas enough. And I picked it up during our first lockdown in March. So this business is a bit of a kind of COVID lockdown project
for me.
Just kind of taken off.
Yeah, well, it's a perfect fit because we know we're all spending a lot more time inside.
Yeah,
and we want to make our living environment as nice as possible. So for people who are listening who are thinking, oh, yeah, that's exactly what I want to do, what's the advice for people who are sort of entering the houseplant market, if you like?
Yeah, I think like we're trying to make houseplants really accessible, because I think people often maybe impulse buy plants. They see a nice plant, they're like, that looks lovely, and they just buy it, and they maybe don't even know the name of the plant. So we're trying to, I suppose, I'd encourage people to, you know the name of the plant, do a little bit of a Google, a bit of research on it, because plants have different watering needs and so on. And one thing that's really, really important is to, you know, put the right plant in the right space.
Make
sure you match the light conditions of a space.
Okay.
And then,
so somebody's listening there. Can you give me one that's maintenance free, please? I just want a plant. I don't want any details. I don't want any technical stuff. Just tell me the name of a plant that I can bring home and it's going to survive.
Yeah, my favourite ones for that sort of situation would be an aspidistra, a cast iron plant.
Aspidistra, right, great name.
It's also known as the cast iron plant,
right.
And it's pretty indestructible. It's a really old-fashioned plant, like my mother hates them.
Right.
She thinks I'm mental, but I'm really trying to bring it back in fashion.
Right.
It's completely indestructible. If you were so lucky as to go away on holidays for a month, you could come back and it'd be still fine.
Right.
So, yeah.
Is it easy on the eye? Why does your mother not like it?
I suppose maybe it's just really old-fashioned. But it's beautiful. It's tall. They can grow up to a metre tall. And it's really structural and elegant looking. And if you wipe the leaves, they get really nice and glossy. And like the beauty of it is that you can just forget about it and
right.
It'll be fine.
And so where does the yucca come in? Everyone had a yucca at one stage. And I couldn't even keep a yucca alive. So could I keep an aspidistra alive, the aspidistra?
I'd say, yeah, if you can't keep an aspidistra alive, you may give up.
Right.
I'd say.
Right. Okay. So that's a good entry level plant.
You hear it a lot, but overwatering. People are overwatering. And also, no, people aren't feeding their plants enough. I hear from a lot of customers, they say, oh, this plant died and that plant died. But, you know, your plant exhausts nutrients in its soil after about 3 or 4 months. So if you have a plant for years and years, you're going to have to give it a little bit of fertilizer, a bit of feed.
Of course. Out in the garden, they can draw on the bigger garden.
Exactly.
But in a pot, it's limited.
It's completely dependent on you.
Yeah.
So that's really, really important. It's just as simple as putting a drop or two of houseplant food in your water and away you go.
Emily, who you spoke to earlier on, she's a text from upstairs. I'm slowly but surely killing my poor bonsai tree. Any tips to bring it back to life, please?
You hear this a lot, but at this time of year, right, plants, it's really common for them to drop leaves. They can get discolored. They can look really funky because it's freezing cold outside. Our heating is pumping. The air is dry. It's so normal for plants to look a bit weird right now. Give it another month or two. Make sure she's not overwatering it. And maybe if she can, just like shimmy it out of its pot and check that it's not sitting in any water or anything like that, and that the roots look healthy.
Right.
But the main thing is, you know, plants are living things, and it's completely normal and totally natural for every little piece of foliage to not look perfect at all times. So tell her to hang tight till springtime and it might just, you know, take off again.
Okay. You were saying there before we got to the one that doesn't need any maintenance, that it's important to choose for the area in the house that you're putting it. So if it's close to a big window, you have one type of plant. And if it's in a dark room, it's a different type of plant.
Yeah, definitely. I think people often think indoor plants need a lot of sunshine and a lot of light. And they often put them right up against windows and scorch them. Whereas a lot of our houseplants are, you know, they're jungle floor plants. That would be their natural environment. So they would get dapple shade, dapple sunlight. And so there's a lot of plants that actually prefer shady spots in a bright room way more to just bang up against a window or on a window ledge.
Okay.
So,
we're speaking to Aaron Thomas from hopelessbotanics.ie. So what's your favourite one, apart from the Aspidistra? What else do you like?
I love Chinese evergreens because they are incredibly hardy. But I suppose my favourite one at the moment is called a Maranta.
Right.
It's also known as a prayer plant, and it's really cool. It's got kind of red veining on the leaves, so it's really spectacular looking, but also it moves during the day. So when you come down and see it in the morning, it might be splayed out, and then at nighttime, it slowly folds back up again. Uh-huh. So it's really nice to watch. Throughout the day, it move.
What are you doing? I'm just watching my plant unfurl here. So I'm very busy. I'm very, very busy. Yeah. Well, if you're trying to do that, that's brilliant. That sounds like mindfulness to me. I'm going to try that. So I'll tell people again, your website is hopelessbotanics.ie, and I see you have a thing called unkillables, which people will be interested in finding out about. Aaron, we'll talk again. Thanks so much for taking our call.
Thank you so much. Bye.
That's Aaron Thomas there. That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
It's the Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.